Hi, this is Paul. A really good clip. Now, Glenn Lowry usually releases clips and then the full video, but a really good clip of a bit of a conversation between Glenn Lowry and John McWhorter on what's been happening with Ibram X. Kendi recently in terms of, let's just get into it.
Looks like it's Ibram X. Kendi again. It's the brouhaha at Boston University, the piece in the New York Times, in the Boston Globe pieces, people speaking out, disgruntled colleagues, administrative review of the...
Now remember, these are people from the New York Times, the Boston Globe, angry at Kendi, and Kendi's being reviewed, and it's kind of a mess.
The Center for Anti-Racism Research.
What I want to know is this. Why is there so much joy about what happened to Kendi, not only among conservatives, but in the media? It's people of all stripes who are so happy to see that guy getting his butt kicked. What is all this joy about? You're joyous. Why?
How do you know I'm joyous?
Because you are. Yeah, I mean, there's a part of me that's saying it's about time, but not for the reasons that a lot of people are thinking. For example, I don't think he's a grifter. I don't think that he's been trying to put one over on people. It's not that this near criminal is being brought to justice. I don't think of it that way at all. Do you?
Oh, John. I almost don't know what to say. But I'm going to, because we're friends, I'm going to pay you the respect of being honest with you. I mean, that just feels like, it feels like a pose. The line that you are describing to me coming from you feels like a pose. Everybody's schadenfreude, you know, everybody's enjoying this disaster of this guy, and they're crowing and they're whatnot. And I mean, that's not very honorable. That's not very edifying, that kind of response. You know, chickens coming home to roost. What did Malcolm X say after the Kennedy assassination? You know, that kind of thing. That's cheap. That's not. And I don't think that's where I'm coming from. But you.
Okay, let's jump. If you haven't seen the Piers Morgan, Jordan Peterson interview, you absolutely have to see it. And if you don't have time to watch the whole thing, just jump to the part where they start talking about God. I'm going to play a clip a little bit before it, but the whole thing is good.
The world is acting as judge, jury, and executioner before this guy has had a chance. And I've no idea where the...
So if you feel that way about Brand, you should probably feel that way about Kendi.
The truth lies yet with Russell Brand, other than he vehemently denies these allegations. But they are allegations, and they have not yet gone through due process. Why are we now doing this to people, where they get eviscerated, destroyed, cancelled, ruined, and convicted in the court of public opinion before they ever really get a chance to go through proper legal process?
Well, part of it is, you know, we have people that we admire and that we aspire to be, and sometimes for better or worse, they're often celebrities and we love them, but we kind of hate them too because they're so annoying, because they're better than us in many ways, and that's why we admire them. And so on the one hand, we elevate them to a status that we probably shouldn't elevate them to, but on the other hand, we're pretty damn happy when we can, you know, fling them to the ground and peck off all their feathers, especially if we can do that at no cost to ourselves. And social media enables that tremendously, because you can generate a mob of accusers and they can be anonymous, and you can do that in no time flat, and you can peck the feathers off someone and you can walk away feeling real good about yourself, and you can be happy that you got to express your resentment and bitterness, and away you go. And of course you sacrifice someone for doing that, but it's not you, and that's just fine. And so we're doing that nonstop. So
I thought that was an interesting phrase, especially in this light. And of course you can sort of reverse it between the two. And so John McWhorter, you know, basically says, hey, wait a minute, what's with all the glee about the fall of Kendi? And of course McWhorter and Kendi have squared up a number of times.
You, instead of going to the heart of the matter, which is an empty suit was elevated to an academic guru position and a ton of money fell on him, and the whole thing fell about because he was an empty suit, which reveals the superficiality of the virtue signaling mania that ensued after George Floyd got killed in Minneapolis in 2020. There was never any there. The emperor had no clothes. This is precisely Hans Christian Andersen's Emperor's New Clothes situation. This is the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain that's been revealed. Instead of that, you use your lofty position and your megaphone of influence to ask questions about the people who are happy to see the whole thing fall apart.
Which is good. I mean, that's why these guys are worth listening to, because if it was just, we're going to dump on Kendi Day, well, okay. I mean, just like Peterson says, you'll love it when your adversary falls and you can all enjoy it. But John McWhorter's going to ask deeper questions. And my point in all of this is all of these episodes are ways to watch spirits at work. Again, Ephesians 6, we battle not against flesh and blood, but principalities and powers. So where are these principalities and powers, and how can we see them? With all of this skepticism about agents that are above us and beyond us, why do these things happen like this? And I think this is a moment in which I think John McWhorter notes that, well, if you're a person that likes to believe in systems and systemic this and systemic that, well, there are other systems going on, and those systems also have their way with people, even if they do so with money instead of, let's say, with violence.
It was rotten to the core. The whole thing was absurd. He was going to solve the racial inequality problem through anti-racist research. He's an empty suit. He doesn't know anything. That's been obvious from day one. So it's not about him.
Right.
It's about the institutions and about the mania of that moment. And by the way, the consequences of the mania of that moment are playing out in real lives all across this country, with cities overrun, with ill-behaved people, with law enforcement apparatus being pulled back, with ridiculous ideology, with failed school systems, with mediocrity everywhere you look. Kendi is just a symptom of something that was very deeply and profoundly wrong. What about Black Lives Matter? What has become of them? What about Ta-Nehisi Coates and Nicole Hannah Jones? Yes, I will go there. What has become of them? They were going to go to Howard and build some kind of center. Where is it? I'm disappointed that you didn't go for the jugular. That's what I'm saying.
Well, the thing is, who's jugular? Kendi is not an academic. He is not a scholar. And I don't mean that as a put down. I mean, that's not what he does. What he wants to be is an anti-racism activist. He happened to get a doctorate. And get a doctorate.
Now, part of this is also, I think, a much more important question about how exactly do you address racism? Can you throw money at institutions and do these institutions and the strategies that they have that are purported to address the ills that they see to achieve the outcomes that they desire, does any of this work? And I've watched, I don't know how many anti-racism programs, and they mostly tend to be job programs and sometimes just sort of people are hired to sort of annoy other people, and what they seem to build up is more resistance and more resentment, and the sum total of that resistance and resentment doesn't tend to be anything like what the thing was intended to address. But my larger point here is things move through the culture, and what are these things? How do they move? Look at what they do with people.
Doctorate, it does open certain doors, that's understandable, but it's painfully clear from his CV, from frankly just listening to him for about 5 minutes, that he's not an academic. And if you put it the right way, you could even say it to him and he might even agree for it. He's out in society trying his version of trying to change real lives, but that's not a scholar. However, all of a sudden in 2020, he gets swept up into this institution where he's supposed to be supervising real research. You know, if you tried to have me administrate something, I would have that thing a smoking hole in the ground in 2 weeks. I would have no idea what I was doing. I don't want to do it. You get the feeling he's similar. He hadn't had any experience running anything, and he's not terribly interested in doing it. I feel him there, but he gets thrust into this position. Why would we expect him not to take it? Is he really supposed to say, no, I'm not I'm not a real researcher, or I don't do what.
And there's sort of wisdom lesson number one. Don't let people sweep you into something that you're probably ill-equipped to do it. Now, this is a very difficult thing because many of us, when we are promoted to something, very much have the imposter syndrome, and we look around and we think, I'm not able to do this. I certainly feel that way often. And then sometimes you have to do it. You can look at Moses and Exodus, and the Lord calls Moses, and Moses says, blah, 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 blah. But then again, it is the Lord calling you.
What these people do, what would I be doing supervising these people? The jugular here is Boston University. Okay. The jugular is anybody in 2020 and thereon who has casually referred to him with terms like scholar and academic and intellectual, and it's clearly—
What about the MacArthur Foundation?
You don't want to sound like you're jealous, but frankly, that too.
Didn't he win a National Book Award?
Yes, he did. And frankly, yeah. And so
again, we see this larger movement of institutions falling. You know, John McWhorter sort of lays his bet on scholars and scholarship, but of course, as he noted a minute ago, as a scholar, don't ask him to run anything. He's a scholar. He enjoys reading and writing and talking about ideas. This is what scholars tend to major in. And for the most part, that's what scholars should major in. There are some that can do multiple things, but we have these hierarchies, and they are hierarchies of competence. And sometimes you get promoted to the place of your incompetence. And unfortunately for Ibram Kendi, that is public, and not just public in terms of conservatives that have been criticizing or critiquing him all along, but in terms of the gatekeepers of the establishment that very much promoted him is now tearing him down.
That's the jugular that you go for, in that there is sometimes a lowered sense of what an academic is when it comes to what Black figure is going to be celebrated. I cannot be mad at Kendi for that. I mean, he just got swept up into something where I think all of us would have taken the money, all of us would have taken the fame. All of this fell apart because he was chosen for something that he shouldn't have been chosen for. But why be mad at him?
I don't know why defending him from anybody's anger is of concern to you, but you can keep your own counsel on that. Let me just posit, I'm not, as it were, mad at him when I point out that he's a fraud. When I point out that he's an empty suit, that, as I said, he's a lightweight, okay? When I call attention to the vacuity and the emptiness of the rhetoric, how to raise an anti-racist baby? Come on. I'm not mad at him to say you're an embarrassment, you're an absurdity. That's simply a description.
That's not accurate, Glenn. You can't call him an embarrassment or an absurdity when he was put into a position by other people. If anything, they made him make himself into an embarrassment. It wasn't his fault. If things were the way they ordinarily
were. You don't want to sort of take away his agency, too. He went along with it. And this is part of, I mean, for a while in this conversation, the conversation sort of laid out, well, there's, everybody was talking about systemic racism, and there's no such thing as these kinds of systems. No, there is. But it's not just about racism or anything. There are systems. And these systems, and you could call them systems, sometimes some dynamics you could call them spirits, and they don't just move in one field or another. They tend to sweep us away, and they tend to, if you're not careful, seduce us and suck us into places that we become exposed, that we are seen for what we lack.
Would be under normal standards of evaluation, he would be an obscure Black studies professor teaching at some state university. That's what he was before all these things happened to him by chance. But he got swept up into something. How can you call that person an embarrassment when it's not his fault? The embarrassment is BU. I'm embarrassed for Boston University as a representative of what American higher education can be. In that,
well, then let's talk about that. I mean, because I agree with you that that's really the issue, and I don't have a stake in up or down on Kendi as such. I think his own biography and arc of his career speaks for itself. Why don't we talk about the institutional problem here?
What they
because
did
as I say, it's not just BU. It's much broader than that.
What BU did is an insult to Black intelligence. But let me change that, because that's too mean to Kendi. What BU did doesn't deserve it. What BU did is an insult to Black achievement. And the best defense I can imagine they would have is that, of course, showbiz is part of things, and showbiz does attract funds. But the idea that you, on the one hand, could be headed.
In other words, BU got him there because of the attention economy. And that attention economy means money, and so that's your justification.
An anti-racist center that was so excellent 30 years ago, and that as if he was remotely capable of doing the same thing, utterly miscast, is a diminishment of Blackness. The people who did that ought to be ashamed of themselves, frankly.
What about the people who paid him $40,000 to show up and give a half-hour long talk without a Q&A? Do you want to put them on the list of people to castigate?
Yes. It almost feels like they're displaying that woman who was supposed to be George Washington's nursemaid, and she was supposed to be 104 years old. It's like they're showing off a Negro. I don't have any problem with them taking the money if it's offered, but the idea that they would pretend that anything that particular person has to say is worth that much money, it's an insult. It's making a Black person a show, in a way. And yeah, I think that's disgusting, but it's not him, it's them.
I was thrilled this morning to see the posting of this conversation between Jonathan Peugeot and Jacob Howland. That conversation that Jonathan and John had with Jacob Howland before was absolutely tremendous. And I think, again, if you understand what happened to Ibram Kendi, and in the light of what John and Jacob are talking about here, I think it makes sense.
A traffic light and something else. But if you've got a million people telling the AI, oh, that's a traffic light, that's a traffic light, that's a traffic light, then the humans, you're literally farming intelligence from humans. And so this weird thing where humans become like, so now you have these low paid, farms of people that are like living in horrible like offices, and all they do all day is tell the AI like what's, even in terms of social media and stuff, like what's good, what's bad. So, you know, that's all you do, even for like the social media companies too. Like you have people all day, all they do is watch horrible content, you know, like, and then all they do is rate it and say, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. So that Facebook can now catch it automatically, right?
He made the comment about this is like the Matrix and human batteries.
So you actually have the idea of this like monster, right? This like this monster that is eating our attention, our intelligence, and like subjugating us to it, but really like, how can I say this? Swallowing our soul, like actually swallowing our soul. And it's like, it's happening in front of us.
That's quite amazing.
And I think you can apply that to, you know, if you have eyes to see, you can apply that to what's happening in the world now. And this has been happening a long, long time. These are the principalities and powers, or one manifestation of them, that you can see how these spirits sort of work through society and feed off us, destroy us. And again, back to Ephesians 6, you might decide you're going to hate Ibram X. Kendi. And I think John McWhorter had the right position in that. It's like, now, does Ibram X. Kendi have no responsibility in this? Well, if you do that, of course, you sort of take away his agency, you infantilize him, and you can't do that either. He played his part. But what I want us to see are these spirits in society that, okay, bring the mighty down and pluck off their feathers, Peterson says. Of, you know, you see this in churches sometimes. The old pastoral wisdom is, you know, beware the person who picks you up at the train station, or these days the airport, beware the person who is your biggest fan in church, because sooner or later they are going to come for you, because they have, in a sense, turned you into an idol. And when you disappoint them, they will take you down. And these dynamics are all around us, and they scale up at all these levels. So I thought that was a terrific video from The Glenn Show, and a couple of these other clips I thought were really helpful in terms of my goal is, and has been through this whole thing, in terms of how can I help people see what the Bible is talking about when the Bible uses language from another world, the past, and we try to understand and recognize it in our own world and gain wisdom from it. So let me know what you think.